south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, a couple of emails first. This one's from Ben from Down Under. He says, G'day, Johnny. Thanks for the water filtration info you gave me. Just a couple of things, though. I was listening to your commentary on music the other week on how people mainly go to see the Rolling Stones, for example, for Keith and Mick. Agreed. I wonder if you're aware of the travesty taking place in the USA with a bunch of phonies going around calling themselves the Little River Band. The lucky prick who runs that show was, from memory, their bass player for about 10 minutes, in their declining years even. Then he bought the name Little River Band somehow and bugger all. All right, me Johnny here. Bugger all is Australian for dickhead or F off, I can't remember. Anyway, then Ben says, now the guy packs houses in the States and the gullible Yanks, no offense Johnny, I know you're not one of those, think they're the real deal, the real Little River Band. However, there's none of the other original members or songwriters whatsoever. Anyway, Johnny, that's not why I'm writing. I'm wondering about doing a phone consultation with you, etc. Cheers, mate. Signed, Ben from Down Under. Hey, Ben. Funny you should mention the fact that classic rock bands are touring all over the place, you know, trying to squeeze the remaining blood out of surviving, nostalgic baby boomers. Well, of course, COVID's kind of strangled that option, for the time being anyway. But nevertheless, a lot of those old geezer baby boomer bands, at least the guys who are still alive and not in nursing homes, are hobbling out on stage. In fact, I'd say, even on this show, 8 or 9 years ago, I did a segment about all the classic old rock bands touring Latin America, most who'd been relegated to oldies stages at state fairs and doing gigs at Indian, whoops, I mean Native American casinos. Man, talk about boring gigs. I did a few of those with my old rock band in the States. Many moons ago, Kimosabe. The thing is, lots of has-been oldie bands have gotten a second wind by touring Central and South America. Who'd have thunk, huh? Especially since 95% of their audiences don't even speak English well enough to understand the words. Not that I, anyone else, or even his mother, has been able to understand Mick Jagger. That goes for Elton John, too. But you know, and I've mentioned this 100 times before, practically anything gringos produce will go big here in Latin America. It's that perpetual gringo wannabe thing you see all the time down here. Of course, not just any gringo band could show up in Latin America and have an audience. They gotta have some name recognition. Unfortunately, I saw how that happened and how it developed. You see, when I was the morning and late afternoon drive-by DJ, before I got this gig about 11 years ago, you longtime listeners may recall I mentioned that I was syndicated in 21 Latin American radio markets, all the big capital cities throughout Latin America. From around the year 2000 to about 2008, you could hear me blathering in English from 7 to 9 in the morning and on some stations from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. I was the drive time gringo guy. My shows were free form. I took calls and played maybe one song every 15 minutes. Nobody told me what songs I had to play. I chose my own. Now, back then, in every big Latin American capital city, usually, they had one station with a gringo like me because, obviously, the advertisers and marketers knew anyone who spoke English or liked English rock and roll music was in a higher socioeconomic bracket than the sweaty masses. And so the marketers and the advertisers piled in with high-end products like Heineken, Gold's Gym, hotel and resort packages, Harley Davidson, even Hooters. So for around 8 years, I had that niche. And my audience were gringo wannabes, so they had the dough to buy certain upscale and imported products that the advertisers would promote. However, if a station or a station chain is going to have a gringo voice, they have to pay a lot more money than a Latin DJ. In fact, you're going to laugh at this. I was told by the bosses at those radio stations I was the highest paid disc jockey in all of Latin America. And my salary? $1,000 a month. I know that sounds pathetic, but I only worked 2 hours a day and it was a hell of a lot of fun. And the perks were tremendous. Free dinners, lunches, concerts, hotels, Harley rallies, MCing, tons of events. But you see, at the time, the average Latin American DJ made around $250 a month. And believe it or not, probably up to half of Latin American disc jockeys worked for free, or what they call canje. Canje is when your advertisers give you freebies. Like, for example, free dinners at restaurants, hotel rooms, health club memberships, etc. Let's face it, most people go into the media because they want to be famous. And that's why so many Latin American DJs will work for nothing, because they get a tiny bit of fame and they love that. So where am I going with this? Well, no matter how big the Latin American city, whether it was San Jose, Costa Rica, Tegucigalpa, Honduras, Medellin, Colombia, Panama City, Panama, there was only room for one big radio station to have a real born in the US gringo DJ. There just weren't enough upscale Latinos who spoke English or expat gringos in the area to make more than one station with gringo programming rentable. Rentable means literally rentable, a moneymaker. The thing is, I was the only gringo DJ. The rest of the programs and DJs on the station were purely in Spanish. Again, that term DJ is a misnomer as far as what I did. Like I said, I probably only play one song every 15 minutes or even every half hour. The rest was just babbling, taking calls, telling stories, having contests, crazy guests. Anyway, the other stations that couldn't afford to have a gringo on staff, yet they wanted to tap in that higher socioeconomic marketplace, what you might call low-budget gringo wannabes. They want to buy everything gringos have, but they just don't have the resources. Well, starting in around 2005, they bought into a cheap prepackaged service coming out of LA called KISS FM, K-I-S-S FM. If I recall, it was around $150 a month. And how that worked was there was an English DJ in LA. He didn't talk much except to introduce the songs. And it was just the gringo top 100 songs of all time over and over and over again. You know, Bee Gees, Stairway to Heaven, Air Supply, Eagles, Rod Stewart, Stevie Wonder, Michael Bolton, Kenny G, And to most musicians, even B-grade musicians like me, it's mostly vomitous stuff. And even if a song was good, like Stairway to Heaven, you'd hear it so many times they'd beat you to death with it, that even the good songs you'd end up hating. So anyway, by around 2008, the era of the real gringo DJ in Latin America was coming to an end. Not just because of the internet, but because every major Latin American market had bought that pre-programmed, pre-canned KISS FM synthetic programming with the same 100 songs over and over and over again. So in the end, we could thank the gringo advantage, the fact that Latinos are dyed-in-the-wool gringo wannabes. They love everything and anything coming out of the States, even the real junk we produce. More and more Latinos started tuning in to KISS FM, and the secondary effect was that those top 100 songs, even if Latinos didn't know what the artists were singing about because they didn't speak any English, became Latino favorites. And oh, by the way, practically every professional office you walked into, doctor, lawyer, accountant, engineer, would have KISS FM piped into their lounges, lobbies, and elevators. A sort of virtue signaling before they even invented the term, don't you think? Though, of course, by around 2015, internet music streaming thankfully killed KISS FM. But 10 years of that repeat, monotonous programming had its long-lasting effect. The result? If you happen to have been one of those has-been gringo bands on that top 100 list, who couldn't even get a gig on the oldies stage at the Ohio State Fair. Well, suddenly you had a brand new market, Latin America. You had something like 20 countries you could tour and sell out stadiums full of people who have no idea what you're singing about. Those are the unintended consequences of a constant rotation of the top 100 gringo hits of all time. Now, let's face it, the average Latino does not drink Heineken or Corona, except maybe at a wedding or 15 años party when the booze is free. But there is an ever-growing middle class of gringo wannabes. And just to have a Zeppelin, Bee Gees, or Aerosmith t-shirt to them seems ever so cool. Now, of course, there have been some famous U.S. bands, a lot of them has-beens again, that have toured Latin America, and they weren't in that KISS FM top 100 beat you over the head till it hurts rotation. Like, for example, Jethro Tull and Metallica. It worked in Metallica's case because heavy metal is big with the college crowd down here. There's always a segment of entitled bohemian Latin American kids who go to private helicopter schools. The jet black hair, black t-shirt, black fingernail polish goth crowd into heavy metal. In fact, there's a pretty active subculture of Latino metal bands too that basically just copy every lick of successful American metal bands. But that's what Latinos do. In fact, if you analyze Latino rock, it's really big down here, by the way. The musicians, even the top musicians, haven't got a creative bone in their bodies. It's all copied, ripped off, and redigested American rock music with even less interesting Spanish lyrics. Now, as for me, the Latin music scene is very disappointing. And being a B-grade musician who did quite a lot of touring myself, I'm sort of hypercritical when it comes to music. And I'm not saying Latinos haven't produced some pretty catchy tunes. They have. And I'm not saying they haven't produced some great dance music. They've got some truly fantastic musicians. I've played with a few myself. But 99% of it's oh, so boring and derivative. But then again, since around 1985, as far as I'm concerned, American music's pretty lame too. In fact, it's beyond lame. But you know, it's true that you bond to the music of your adolescence, even if music at that time was pretty lame and in a terrible dry spell. When you're in your adolescence, you never know that. Forever after, it's your music. In fact, last time I mentioned there was nothing new under the sun since 85. I got a load of emails telling me how wrong I was. I just have to listen to this guy or that one. Again, you're never going to convince someone that the music they love and are bonded to from their adolescent period is seriously lame or just plain sucks, because those are our formative years and we bond to the music of our age. Now, of course, to you, whatever musical era you grew up in, your music doesn't suck. Other people's music sucks. Your era was the best. Now, going back to Ben from Down Under's comments about popular bands with fraudulent members, I remember about 15 or so years ago when my own rock band was playing in Costa Rica, Guatemala, Panama, and the Mayan Riviera. I remember a couple of times sitting around with the guys in the band saying, you know what would really be fun and the Latinos would fall for it? Just pick a gringo band that's famous because of the Kiss FM Top 100 rotation. Just pick a band that's had a few hits on that list, but no one really knows what the individual members look like. No standout guy. Now remember, we're talking in the very early days of the internet, at least here in Latin America, so you couldn't look up things very easily at all. And the idea was to learn the songs from that band and tour under their name. Who would know? It would be easy to get away with. For example, you could call yourself the Steve Miller Band. I mean, who knows what Steve Miller looks like? Or Steppenwolf? Or Bachman Turner Overdrive? Hell, most fans in the States don't even know what the front men look like. Most people, even fans, wouldn't recognize those guys if they were sitting right next to you on the subway. So the point is, many, many classic rock and disco has-been bands have toured through Latin America and they just sell out. Yep, bands like America, Air Supply, Casey and the Sunshine Band, even Creedence Clearwater without the brains, talent, and voice, John Fogerty, even they roll on through and sell out stadiums. How is that possible? Only in Latin America. Imagine if Creedence Clearwater, without John Fogerty, tried to set up a gig in Chicago. I bet no one would show or they'd get laughed off the stage. But classic rock bands do tour in the States and down here in Latin America with practically no original members. That's very common. Especially when a group hasn't had a hit in a long, long time and their popularity wanes. Oftentimes, all they've got left is their old catalog, which isn't selling much anymore. So one of the band members pays off the rest of the guys, or whoever owns the name. It could be the band's longtime manager. They buy the right to use the name exclusively, put together a few young guys and tour, trying to squeeze the last drop of blood out of the stone. Then, once in a while, lightning strikes again, in the form of Hollywood, who are always dredging up old tunes to use in their movies. And then comes the second or third wind. Though oftentimes has-been bands don't even own the rights to their own songs anymore. In fact, once a long, long time ago, right before I left for Latin America, about 31 years ago, I was at a summer resort spot in northern Wisconsin. You may have heard of it, Wisconsin Dells. I was sitting in a bar and restaurant joint, and there was a band in the back room on a little stage. And I heard them do a song. The song was Let's Live for Today, a number one hit, I think, in the late 60s, by a group called the Grassroots. And damn, it sounded exactly like the original. The singer, a perfect mimic. During the break, I walked up to the singer and said, man, you really nailed that. He said, I hope so. I wrote it. He says, we are the Grassroots, minus, I think he said, the drummer and the bass player, who now own the name. So he and the rhythm player. The singer and songwriter can't even tour with that name. I can't remember what they called themselves, but it wasn't the Grassroots. Now, for you youngsters who don't know who those guys were, they've sold over 20 million records and had 14 top 40 records. But that was in the 60s and 70s, and after their winning streak dried up, things began to look pretty bleak. Though a decade or so after that, Hollywood saved their asses too. Snapped up a few of their songs for various soundtracks, they regrouped, have been on the oldies circuit ever since. And that should sustain them as long as baby boomers are able to get day passes from the nursing home. Oh, and by the way, I understand the Grassroots have been touring since 2012 as the Grassroots with no, I said no, original members. Even worse than Down Under Ben's example. But since they never had a standout member for fans to hone in on, people who attend their concerts in the States even are none the wiser. Their members, as with previous example, Bachman Turner Overdrive and Steve Miller, are unrecognizable by the public, even people who buy their records. Though the thing is, since they haven't had any of their hits on the Kiss FM Moldy Oldie Classic 100 rotation list, they could never really make it here in Latin America. Down here, they've got no song or name recognition. Are you seeing how this works? Now, I do believe with all this talk of classic Moldy Oldie lists, And second, when touring for has-been bands here in Latin America, I must be showing my age, huh? Well, I'll give you a hint. I was too young to go to Vietnam, so I'm not quite nursing home material yet. In fact, that's how I got hired into a very well-known rock band in Chicago. Got drafted, went to Nam. And I, because I was too young to get drafted, was his replacement. In fact, I was so young, I had to have my parents sign a statement to allow me to be able to play in the nightclubs, bars, and strip clubs. Now, you might laugh at this, but my mother was so Catholic and knew so many Catholic priests. When I played at a well-known strip club, it was called the Cheetah. In fact, we came on the day after Gary Lewis and the Playboys had a gig. Remember them? They had a few top 10 hits. Anyway, my mother asked one of her young Catholic priest friends to visit the Cheetah strip club to make sure all was on the up and up. And he walked in, had a few drinks, gave me a high five, and left. You know those priests, they like to drink, especially the Irish ones. By the way, someday, if I'm not boring you too much, I'll tell you about the time I was playing in the Cheetah Club, and during the break, I sat down in the bar, and a guy came over, sat next to me, and said he was going to kill me. He was a former drummer in my band, and we kicked him out because he was schizophrenic. Though we kicked him out gently, you know, schizophrenic and all that. We thought we kicked him gently. Anyway, he came in, sat down, looked at me in the eye, started talking crazy. He held up a pitcher of beer to my head and said he was going to smash my brains in. Dead serious, too. Maybe I'll tell the rest of that story sometime. By the way, within a year, he was dead and he was only 21. What a life, huh? You never know. All right, am I boring you yet? Okay, let's get back to Latin America. That is the theme, you know. Let's talk about vaccines and vaccine passports. That's a huge topic these days, right? You must have heard the fact that when Eric Clapton got vaxxed, he thought he was going to lose his talent forever. He just completely spazzed out, lost all control for a couple of weeks and couldn't play his guitar. Thought it was permanent damage, became a complete anti-vaxxer. In fact, he said he will not play a concert anywhere unless they let non-vaxxers in. So naturally, the wokers and the Twitter mob came out in mass, calling him an anti-vax hypocrite, with the Twitter and Facebook mob going way back 20, 30, even 40 years ago, picking and choosing little things he said in public that are now considered racist and sexist. You know the drill. If you want to destroy somebody, go into their past. You'll find something, even if it was appropriate for the time. Before those toxic wokesters reared their pimply heads, comedians, everyone, all of us, could say things nice, nasty, and otherwise. And if the people around you didn't like it, they could argue the point or just drop you. Back then, you could be controversial, even an a-hole, and not lose your job. Lose your friends, maybe, but not your job. Not if you were competent at it. Funny, though, how the Twitter mob and the wokesters are biggest hypocrites of all. You got people like Meryl Streep, Sean Penn, Alec Baldwin, Robert De Niro, and a thousand other Hollywood wokesters, people who don't know a thing about science, telling us what we should and must do with our own bodies. But when one of their own or previous own, like Eric Clapton, does not toe the party line anymore because some really nasty secondary effects happen to him, the wokesters circle their wagons, dig out little inconvenient quotes from his past life, and try to destroy him. And if you're following that story, you'll see they're digging out age-old embarrassing things he said while he was extremely drunk. Have you ever said anything crass or that you regret while you were extremely drunk? Of course not. Though expat Eddie says if you don't remember, it doesn't count. But I digress as usual. By the way, the reason Clapton said he'll play for the non-vaxxed is because 2 days earlier, United Kingdom Prime Minister Boris Johnson said that vaccine passports will be mandatory at all public venues like music concerts beginning in September. And Clapton said, shove it. But man, they're rolling out the Gestapo tactics. For example, the upcoming Foo Fighters concert at Madison Square Garden. Get this, not only do you have to get vaxxed before you attend, you can't attend unless you've had the second dose at least 14 days before the concert. That is, if you've had the Pfizer or Moderna COVID-19 vax. Or if you've had the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vax, you must have had it at least 14 days prior to your first single dose. What can I say but I am just so glad and lucky I live in Latin America. Now, take lame street media. What hypocrites, they're so full of shit. I'm reading this from an article in the Los Angeles Times this week. The article's saying, and it's not an op-ed piece, it's a real article. It says, here we go again in regards to Clapton. Vaccinated celebrity types discouraging vaccination for the masses. Worse yet, guys like Clapton making vaccine hesitancy seem heroic. A revolt against tyranny. For art. Then this pus-brained fool says, and just as the Delta variant delivers death around the world. Are you getting this? It's okay for pus-brained Hollywood celebrities to tell everyone to get vaxxed. Then the wokesters heap praise on them. But when a celebrity type says the opposite, based on real evidence, a bad secondary effect, the guy must be silenced, canceled, and destroyed. And now the lamestream official news is saying, and this is too sad to be funny, they're saying the official advice is to open a window to increase ventilation and slow the spread of COVID. An added incentive being the virus could be spread by farting, flatulence. According to suspected cases in Australia and well-documented cases of diseases spreading through waste pipe ventilation during lockdowns in Hong Kong when the U-bend had dried out, the U-bend being the pee trap that you see in your sinks, and there's one below every toilet too, that's there to prevent the backflow of gases through sewer pipes into your room. By the way, down here in Latin America, they don't call those plumbing pee traps, they call them sifones, spelled just like a siphon. They call them siphons or siphones here, though we all know you siphon with a tube, you know, like siphoning gas out of a car or motorcycle. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the way a pee trap works. Again, a pee trap, it's there to prevent sewer gases from backing up into your room. So when you call a plumber and he's talking about siphones, you know he's talking about those pee traps. Speaking of being so glad that I live in Latin America, I understand now that California will require all state employees and all healthcare workers to provide proof of the COVID-19 vaccination or get tested weekly with a stick up your nose. And this you probably don't know, and one of the reasons why California is a completely bankrupt, failed state. Did you know there are 246,000 state employees in California? And starting on August 2nd, this week, all need to be vaxxed or take a stick up their nose once a week. Oh, and by the way, the COVID-19 vaccine requirement also applies to everyone working in adult senior residential facilities, homeless shelters, jails, etc. Even if they're not state employees working for private firms. So, all you guys and gals living in California, I've got no sympathy for you. You've been seeing the writing on the wall for years and you're still there. I guess California's new state motto is stay woke and go broke. Same thing with New York. Mayor de Blasio announced that public sector workers will get jabbed by September or else they'll be routinely tested with the old stick-up-your-nose test too. So all you New Yorkers, you happy about that? For years, you've been seeing the writing on the wall too. You had plenty of time to get your ducks in order, to get the hell out of Dodge. I know, you've got your reasons and a million excuses, don't you? All right, let's take an email from Marion Carl. She says, hey, Johnny, it's been far too long since we've corresponded. I am the flight attendant who visited you with my husband maybe 5 years ago, bringing some vitamins you asked us to bring. We've since moved from Texas to Florida over the BS lies and COVID, the restrictions, lockdowns, etc. I quit my Chicago airline and my husband also retired. We're sick of government restrictions. We will not take the highly suspect and possibly poisonous vaccine. Question is, if we relocate to Guatemala, will we be free? Are they requiring masking? Are they pushing the vaccine? Must you show a vaccine card? We just want to live someplace in the world where the government isn't in our faces and our business 24/7. Thanks again. Signed, a former Chicago flight attendant. P.S. Can you explain how to access your old podcast? We'd like to go back to March 2020 and listen to your COVIDiot podcast as the pandemic played out. All right, let's answer the last question first. You know, a lot of people want to know how to get to the old podcast. They go back 11 years. It's easy and they're free. Just go to theexpatfiles.podbean.com. Once you go there, you'll see you can access every show by month and year. And each show has a description with some bullet points. Though as far as digressing, there's no possible way to list all that stuff. So again, you can download every show all the way back to 2010 by going to theexpatfiles.podbean.com. And as far as the COVID-19 restrictions in Guatemala, I just talked to my number one seminar lady, Rita, today. Her dad is a well-respected Guatemalan surgeon, and he says there are COVID-19 cases in hospital emergency rooms, but they don't end up in the hospital at all. If they take ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, as soon as the flu-like symptoms start, he said people who take ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine never end up in the hospital. It's those advanced cases when people have pre-existing conditions and haven't taken anything that end up in emergency rooms. And by the way, you can buy ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine right over the counter at any drugstore, no prescription necessary. A 5-day treatment, and that's all you'll need. For the both of them, will cost you under $20. By the way, the recommended dosage is 200 milligrams of hydroxychloroquine once a day for 5 days, and approximately 18 milligrams of ivermectin once a day for 5 days. Now, hydroxychloroquine comes in a 200 milligram pill, easy. But ivermectin, at least the way I've bought it myself, I've got a store of it just in case. It comes in little 6-milligram blister tabs. With the onset of symptoms, you take 3 of those 6-milligram tabs each day for 5 days. Now, of course, some people are taking ivermectin prophylactically. All they're doing is taking one of those 6-milligram pills once a week, even once a month, and one of those 200-milligram hydroxychloroquine tablets as well. And that seems to completely eliminate the possibility of you ever getting the COVIDiot strain. In fact, that's how they found out those two drugs work against COVIDiot. They found out people in third world countries and Africa who take those drugs prophylactically, hydroxychloroquine because it's anti-malarial and ivermectin because it's anti-parasitic, you know, it eliminates intestinal and other parasites. Well, doctors found out that the poorest of the poor, most susceptible to COVID, just weren't getting it. Looking deeper into the phenomena, they quickly found out they were taking prophylactic dosages of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. In fact, they were taking very small dosages, sometimes only once every 1 or 2 months, yet it still protected them completely from the COVIDiot strains. But you knew that already, right? Or did you? In fact, many doctors here in Latin America are calling ivermectin, which is the drug that really knocks it out, a modern-day penicillin. Oh, and as to your question about being vaxxed in Guatemala, well, up-to-date statistics reveal that only 2% of Guatemalans have been fully vaxxed. Which is pretty odd because the president of Guatemala is an MD. So if any of you out there think the Guatemalan government carries a big stick, all I have to say is, really? Obviously, you've had no boots on the ground down here. Oh, and one more thing before we go. A few parting words from the famous Captain Mango, who is a connoisseur of rock and roll, even some bad heavy metal rock and roll. He says, in regards to the profound effect music has on people's lives, let me add my 2 cents. Surely you've heard some people think if you play rock songs backwards, you will hear satanic messages. Others say if you play country songs backwards, you'll get your girl back, your truck will work, and you'll be ahead 6 months on your trailer park rent. Some say if you play rap backwards, or its even more moronic Latin American version, reggaeton, the cops will be your friends, your rap sheet will disappear, you'll open doors for women, pay your child support, start flossing, donate your gold teeth to charity, learn how to spell, your IQ will pop over 100, and your pants will smartly jack themselves back up to your waistline. Now, if you play a jazz record backwards, you'll get jazz.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.